time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And we are rolling along on a Thursday. Hi, Pauly G. Y'all set there?
Yeah, I am. Well, listen, the microphone in studio, another one, it got a case of being broken, and it was replaced. We had a nice little pit change in here. AD doing a fantastic job, so yeah, I'm doing all right.
Shout out to AD. How you doing, Sean? Sean's good.
I'm never ready for the first segment.
I know, but I want to incorporate you in the show. Okay, Mike McDaniel Lance McCullers Jr. / Sean Mapes behind the glass.
Wearing a Vans hat.
He is wearing a Vans hat.
Oh, what's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that. I like
the King of
a Vans
fashion
hat.
Over here with the Celtics jersey and
cap. He's like, you pointed out for a reason.
Yeah. All right, so the Astros, up and down, up and down. We're not that far into the season, but they did fall to the Angels last night, 6-0. The Angels looked great. They take 2 of 3 with this win over the Astros. And what we saw after that cross-country road trip, what we hoped was that the Astros would have that resurgence at home. And they did for their opening day game. They looked great. The offense was on it. The bats were going. It's been kind of a series of unfortunate events since then. Jose Altuve getting injured in that home opener. And then the Angels really just putting it to him.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani is their god. Based off,
I mean, he's
of,
the god of all of baseball and specifically the Angels.
He had a 2-run double in the first inning. All 6 runs for the Angels came in the first inning because Jake Odorizzi couldn't get through it. And Shohei Ohtani, meanwhile, had a perfect game through 5 innings and he had 12 strikeouts in the 6th inning. It's one of these games where, I mean, I'm not sure what to be most annoyed by, especially because every time I express frustration with some of the things on this team, I am told, oh, it's early. Oh, you should wait. But, Vanessa, this was an ugly performance, and I get it. Shohei Ohtani's a great pitcher, but you can't be getting bullied the way that you did last night.
Yeah, history before the game even happened. This is per Matt Birch on Twitter. LA Angels senior communications manager says per Elias Sports, Shohei Ohtani is the first starting pitcher in the modern era since 1900 to bat twice in the top of the first inning before ever taking the mound. It is cool to see what he's doing. It's cool to see him on the cover of Time magazine and working his magic specifically against the Astros. It was frustrating. And then I don't know if you've noticed this, and I pay attention to these kinds of things probably from a TV perspective more, but there are so many empty seats at the Astros home games, the Diamond Club seats. I know it's a weekday. I am well aware that it's early on in the season.
There's that weird 5:40 start.
But it's Shohei Ohtani. Wow. I mean, didn't people want to see Shohei? If I have Diamond Club seats to see Shohei Ohtani, I'm going.
Interesting that you bring that up. It sort of goes to show you that people don't really care that much about Shohei Ohtani. We talk about Shohei Ohtani, but he is not some draw like Babe Ruth was back in the 1920s or 1930s or something like that. Like, there's no baseball player that's individually going to bring that many people there. Though, I would have liked to be there to see at least Shohei Ohtani doing things, because, again, the Astros couldn't do anything. And I know, early, blah, 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 whatever. Shohei Ohtani bullied you, and you can't hit, and Jake Odorizzi can't pitch.
Are you out on Jake Odorizzi?
Yeah.
How done are you with Jake Odorizzi? Because the Twitter people last night, there's been frustration with Jake Odorizzi for a while. Last night, I think it was an all-time high.
Yeah, and look, I mean, you're in a spot where you have to put him in the rotation because of Lance McCullers being injured. He has to pitch for you. If you go further into the year, assuming McCullers comes back, then you probably won't have to use him. He can be a long reliever. But the idea that you're going to be able to trade him or something like that, ooh, I don't see that happening. And, you know, one of the things that I always find funny about pitchers after games, Dallas Keuchel used to do this, is they'll talk about how, well, I was nearly there. Jake Odorizzi had a couple of comments like that after the game, and it got a little bit annoying to me. Here's the first of 2 comments made by Odorizzi.
Not enough strikes. You know, thought I executed some good pitches, but just boils down to getting ahead, less pitches per bat.
Look, he probably was close to having good pitches. I don't care. I just hate it when pitchers
almost
say that.
Almost doesn't count.
Right, exactly.
At all.
Horseshoes and hand grenades. Am I right, fellas?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, isn't that what it is? Close. So Odorizzi went a little bit further, and he did take accountability. I don't want to act like he was making excuses last night after a two-thirds of an inning start, but he continued talking about how things were close, I guess.
The misses were small, but at the end of the day, if they're still misses, then it's essentially all the same. But just keep grinding by through it, move forward. It's about the only way to go at this point. It seems like it's been an atrocious start to the season, and the only way to go is forward, really.
Seems like it's been an atrocious start to the season. Wow. I mean, look, you got to, I guess, spin things in your mind in some way, shape, or form. It has been definitively a rough start to the year. 0-2 with a 9 ERA thus far, 4 walks in those two-thirds of innings.
When you see guys that are struggling this early on this heavily, Jake Odorizzi, Kyle Tucker, obviously two different positions, it's kind of a different ballgame. But does it concern you for the longevity of this season, or are you like, early start, rough start,
Well, most
whatever.
People are saying that, so apparently I'm supposed to do that. When there's only a two-third inning start by Jake Odorizzi, who looks awful in it, I should be fine with that. And when the Astros can't score one run, I should be fine with that, because I'm accepting who I am as a person. I'm an overreactive baseball fan. I'm wrong. You're right. Nothing to see here. Nothing's wrong. Everything's fine. Everything is good and fine and good.
Is that a song that your therapist recommended?
No, it's actually this song on Instagram that I spent about an hour looking for yesterday, and I couldn't find it. But a lot of people are posting things where...
Oh, it's a real song.
It's a really bad song, but it's a real song that is bad, like Jake Odorizzi.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, our guy Jose Altuve, second baseman, injured his hamstring on Monday. We saw that in slow motion. He ran first, ran to first on a slow ground ball to third base. The Astros played him, placed him on 10-day IL. Not overly shocking. The minute right. that the injury happened and he went down, you could kind of hear everybody go quiet, and we knew that it would not be great. How do you feel about him being on the 10-day IL, and do you think it lasts longer?
Well, James Click said yesterday that there was a scan that took place Tuesday night, that the results were good, and that they might have him on the injured list for a minimum amount of days. So that makes me feel good, but it also makes me wonder whether or not they are potentially rushing him back out there. Because, again, with all these baseball people telling me that it's early, it is early. Don't force guys back out there, because none of these games matter, apparently, right? It's fine to lose and not score runs and get shelled.
If the Astros go to the World Series again this year, are you going to pull this audio and be like, yeah, I was wrong?
I motivated them.
Either way, Pauly G is the instigator here.
Listen, I understand that being concerned right now is way too reactionary for a team that we have seen pull itself from the abyss several times. I mean, just go back to 2020. They were a sub-500 team, and they were pretty damn close to making it to the World Series and coming back from down 3-0 in a series. It's not like this team isn't capable of doing things, and I would never say that they aren't. I'm just right. saying this sucks right now, and I feel like I should be allowed to say that. That's
true
it.
Fan. Do you so tired is being mad at the Astros, wired being mad at James Click.
Ooh.
There was a tweet from Jeremy Kaufman, and he is a conflicts and risk analyst. He's basically a huge sports fan. I don't usually read like fan tweets on air, but I did think that this was an interesting tweet.
Okay.
James Click has burned over $13 million in salary this year between Jake Odorizzi and Pedro Baez.
Ooh, Pedro Baez is also
These guys are essentially non-playable. People need to finally come to terms with the fact that the Astros have, at best, a middle-tier GM when they once had the best GM. Speaking of Luno, of course. The drop-off has been enormous.
Huh. Well,
are you questioning James Click's ability now that this is his third season?
Based off of two players, I don't know. I mean, it's a 28-man roster
right
now. It's expanded until a couple of weeks from now when they shrink it back down. And you have a couple of your players injured coming out of spring training. I don't think that right now this is the time to say James Click is failing because there are two players on the roster who aren't good. Every team in baseball has this. How many times, I mean, remember when the Astros had Ken Giles?
Yeah.
You know, there are always going to be on a 25-man roster one or two players that don't belong, especially with a couple of injuries. That's just Major League Baseball. That's why a lot of guys are career minor leaguers. So I don't think that that's a fair way to characterize the James Click era, but I do think he's right in that, yes, Click is clearly not Jeff Luhnow, and I wonder just how much power Click has to do what he wants, given, one, what Crane probably saw happen with Luno, where Luno maybe had a little more independence.
Yeah.
Would you want to give someone independence like
you
that?
You think that maybe James Click is paying for some of Luno's mistakes, where Jim Crane is being more controlling of
in
the
a
franchise.
Way, yeah, Vanessa. I think he has less power. And I also think, too, if you're Jim Crane, right now you have the roster. It's about managing and keeping as many players as you possibly can. I think right now Crane is the one to look at as far as the ability to keep this thing together as opposed to Click. Because I think that Crane has to greenlight everything Click does.
Yeah, Jim Crane's an involved owner. He's not somebody that's just going to let people do whatever they want. We have Matt on the line talking about Jake Odorizzi. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to get in on this real quick.
Yeah.
For me, Jake Odorizzi is the type of pitcher where I don't like anything about him. I don't like his demeanor on the mound. You can see it in his face whenever the game starts to get in his head, and that's something that I just can't stand. And he has a history of these terrible start press conferences last year complaining about Dusty Baker taking him out too soon, and the guy just doesn't have that good of stuff. He doesn't miss enough bats. When he's in the zone and when he's out of the zone, it can be a nightmare like it was yesterday. And I'll tell you what's, for me, very frustrating about this situation is the only reason why he's filling that spot and not Christian Javier is because James Click gave him that contract.
Mm.
Now, it's not that big of a contract as far as I'm concerned. So for me, that should be the last start we see Odorizzi make. Christian Javier is a proven starter in years past. He is a, I think, way higher potential guy than Odorizzi at this point. There's no reason why those two shouldn't switch spots. And the only time we see Jake Odorizzi is in blowouts and long relief. Thanks, guys. I'll hang up and listen.
Matt,
yeah, that's a great call. And he makes a really good case for what kind of we talked about with James Click and that angle of him wanting Odorizzi to do well because he gives him that contract. What were your thoughts?
And specifically pointing to the Christian Javier
yeah.
thoughts, I mean, he's right. He had 10 starts in 2020. He had 9 starts last year. And if you're just looking at the statistics, and I wasn't here to watch it as much as I would have liked to, obviously, they are pretty good. And as far as his strikeouts through 9, like, he gets guys out. 11.5 last year. So this is a guy that, yeah, you would think maybe should get an opportunity. Is it because of the contract that Odorizzi is still there? Again, it's early, so you can adapt.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this is something that the Astros would consider doing. But I like the call. I like the idea.
I think the Astros will adapt, especially if the starts by Jake Odorizzi like that continue. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're talking NBA playoffs, plus another college basketball legend retires, but he does it a little differently than the others. That's next.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And we are in the midst of NBA playoffs. Seen a lot of good games, some mediocre games. We have not seen anything good from Kevin Durant, which we'll get to. But let's start with Paul Gallant's favorite, James Harden, and the 76ers, who are up 3-0 on the Raptors.
Yeah.
I didn't think they'd sweep. I mean, I thought they'd win. I thought, like, James Harden and the 76ers would win, but they have dominated Toronto.
I had the score on in the background because I was watching. First off, I was on my two TV setup. I was watching the Celtics game
Humble
and the
brag.
Astros. It's an actual
Humble.
Brag.
Humble
Both
brag.
Those TVs are cheap. And then afterwards, I put on the Sixers game, and I saw Joel Embiid hit that shot in overtime. And once again, it's a game where James Harden's not doing a whole lot of anything. That Toronto team is not very good. I give them a lot of credit for being in the spot that they're in as far as making the playoffs. But, yeah, it's been a series where either Tyrese Maxey or Joel Embiid have been doing everything for Philadelphia, and James Harden's along for the ride. You can do that against Toronto. Can you do that against Miami? I don't know. Can you do that against Milwaukee? Can you do that against Boston or Brooklyn? I don't think so. So good for the Sixers. They don't have to face any of those tough questions quite yet, and that was a nice win and a nice last-second three-point shot in overtime for Joel Embiid with 0.8 seconds to go.
I like Joel Embiid, and I like seeing shots like that, but he's definitely, like you said, he's definitely carried the weight defensively. We know what Maxey can do, and we've seen what he's doing in this NBA playoffs. Meanwhile, our viewers on Twitch can see your Celtics jersey.
Yeah, hell yeah.
The Celtics won last night, and they have shut down Kevin Durant.
Completely shut him
down. In a way that he... if you watch the post-game press conferences, doesn't really seem to be too worried about. But it's been stunning. He's shot under 40% and committed 6 turnovers in both games. This is per ESPN, the first time in his career that he's had consecutive, not just in the playoffs, that's the first time in Kevin Durant's career that he's had consecutive games that bad.
And you're waiting for him to blow up, and I know that at some point during this series he will hit everything. But he's looking like James Harden out there. And what I really like about the way the Celtics are making this happen is that they're just hitting him. They are legitimately chipping him, shoving him, pushing him like he is a running back trying to get out of the backfield and get open for a quarterback. It reminds me, honestly, of what you saw from the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 36, where they just beat the hell out of Marshall Faulk the whole game. Like, when he had the ball, when he didn't have the ball, they would just hit him. They're doing the same thing here, and it's working great. And I'm surprised that it's working as well as it is, because it takes a lot of energy to continuously do that over the course of a game, just like it takes energy to get through it. But Brooklyn was up 17 in this game, and the Celtics were missing easy shot after easy shot after easy shot, and Brooklyn never pulled away. And I remember at halftime hearing Charles Barkley say, "The Nets lost this game in the last couple of minutes of the second quarter because Boston was down big."
Yeah.
And they pulled back in where it was, I think, a 10-point deficit, 8-point deficit at halftime. And it was with Brooklyn shooting at one point, I think, like 75% of the first quarter. They weren't able to build a bigger lead than that, and it just slowly trickled away in the third and the fourth quarter. Really, what Boston's been doing to Durant is incredible, and they did it to Kyrie Irving yesterday, too.
Meanwhile, the Bulls and Bucks playing in the NBA playoffs as well. That is a series tied at 1-1, and it goes heads back to Chicago.
Right, and I don't expect it to remain that. The Chicago was the cute story at the beginning of the year. Oh, Chicago's not terrible for a change, and DeMar DeRozan's had a pretty good year for Chicago, and he had 41 points last night. But that's what it is going to take in every single game, I think, for Chicago to beat Milwaukee in multiple games. Credit to them, though. I thought that of all the games, of all the series in the first round that involve a team in terms of a real title contender, I thought that Milwaukee was going to have a cakewalk in this one. And no, Chicago won.
They put up a fight for sure. And if you know anything about Chicago sports fans, it is that they always have hope. So if you see the narrative, it was, oh, Chicago's back, we have ourselves a series. Paul Gallant says maybe not so much.
No. It's nice, though, that they got the win. I'll give them credit for that. But yeah, that's a team that just can't compete with Giannis.
One of the things that we're seeing a lot in college basketball, we've seen some big names retire within the last year and a half. Roy Williams, Coach K, and yesterday, Jay Wright at Villanova for 21 seasons, 2 titles, heck of a coach, really well respected, and he's gone. And he did it very quietly. He retired. He did not give a reason why. And this is actually what was more shocking to me. Fordham's Kyle Neptune is going to take over, which indicates to me that Jay Wright told them a couple weeks, if not months ago, told Nova, hey, I'm out.
Wow. And I mean, they made the Final Four this year. It's surprising because you look at him and he strikes you as someone who is extremely energetic and has a lot of time left. He's only 60 years old.
That's young for college coaching.
And he's a young-looking 60. Yeah. I would have guessed that he's in his early 50s. He's a good-looking guy.
He is a great-looking guy.
The demands of college coaching must suck. And I would think that there's going to be a lot more of this in the near future. That's why, you know, when I heard the Sean McVay rumors in the NFL about him potentially walking away to go to do a studio job or a play-by-play color commentary kind of job, like, why wouldn't you take those jobs?
Totally.
Assuming you've actually accomplished something. And I mean, Jay Wright won 2 national titles and went to 4 Final Fours with Villanova. That is not easy to do. That is not a program that is ripe with cash. It's a private Catholic school. It's not like they don't get any money. And over the last couple of years, they've clearly been getting enough. but that's a tough place to win. And he has won there. Now, I mean, what does he do? He's got plenty of opportunities. I'm sure that he'll be all over television. Mm-hmm. And that's a probably much easier job than being a coach.
Way easier. Right. And it is the number one reason why I didn't buy that Sean Payton was just going to go to the Cowboys, sit out a couple months, and then try to go to the Cowboys. Or, I mean, when you look at all of the coaches that have retired or that leave the game early-ish, the number one thing they all say is that they just couldn't do the late hours anymore. They couldn't be amped up on coffee and Mountain Dew and all of that, and they don't want that. One of the conversations that's emerged with Jay Wright saying that he's going to retire is the reason why. Why Roy Williams, Coach K, Jay Wright within the last year and a half? Is this partially due to NIL? Is it the combination of that with the transfer portal madness, which we've heard some, you know, college coaches talk about?
That's what Roy Williams, I think, had suggested. And I know that Coach K has complained about it. They all complain about it. That's what all the entitled coaches do. Possibly. It could be a factor. But Villanova is not one of those programs that I think really has to worry about those kind of players, the guys who are going to leave and go to another place. In fact, I feel like it might be a program where, hey, they can pilfer somebody away. Say they like what they see at St. Peter's, which is not that far away, and they liked one of those players enough to bring him into their program. Like, they would have been able to do it, absolutely, as opposed to vice versa. I guess that's part of it, but something just tells me that people are realizing this is so much damn work. I don't see my family ever.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted. And for what? If I've won? For what? In a sport where you're not going to win multiple national titles in college basketball. You'll be lucky if you win one, even if you're a great coach. Jim Boeheim at Syracuse has been there for what? And I don't know if he's a great coach, but he's been there for what? 40 years and he's won one title. You know, it's really hard to win there. And you put in all this effort and you put in all this energy. If you've already won and you've won twice and you've been to four Final Fours, I'd imagine you would get to a point where you're like, well, what the hell am I still doing this for?
It's hard to pin it on one thing, but there is a great article that I found last night from CBS, Gary Parrish, and he wrote it like this. Name, image, and likeness rights were long overdue. The one-time transfer waiver is fair. Alternative options for high school prospects are great, and social media is fun. But even the coaches who agree with each of those previous four sentences acknowledge that the combination of those things has made their jobs complex and in many ways unappealing. Gary Parrish then, of course, talks about Coach K, Roy Williams, and Jay Wright, or that Maryland's coach and Louisville's coach, Chris Mack, just straight quit in the middle of the season. I mean, the combination of those four things, it's not like, oh, social media is bad, NIL is bad, the transfer portal is bad, high school options are bad, but all of that together is causing things to be more complicated.
Yeah, definitely, and I would just not want to do it anymore if I was in that guy's shoes.
Would you just retire and go to Costa Rica and chill?
Probably Croatia. But
or Arizona, Scottsdale.
Well, I don't know. I don't see Scottsdale. I think that Scottsdale is a vacation place. That is not a place you live. I would not survive Scottsdale. I would not survive Vegas. I would probably not survive New Orleans, though. I think there's a chance for me there. No, I'm going someplace that's like completely off the grid where I'm not going to see anybody ever again.
But the point is, you're not going to a different job.
No.
Yeah.
And something like this, but some of these guys are married to it, and I think that's why they still do it. Like Bill Belichick is, what, in his 70s? Pete Carroll's in his 70s? You would think that either of those two guys, like, what do either of them have to prove? Pete Carroll's won a national title and a Super Bowl. Bill Belichick's won more Super Bowls than anyone ever will. I mean, why are you still doing it? You must be addicted.
I never thought that Sean McVay was actually going to leave because the reporter question had been something about work-life balance. But to your point, is he going to coach until he's 60, especially now that he's won a Super Bowl? I don't see it.
I'm shocked that coaches are still coaching in their 60s. Like, yeah. Lovie Smith is the head coach of the Houston Texans. He is in his 60s. Why? Why are you still doing this,
respect,
man?
For Gary Kubiak, who was like openly like, I never want to do that again.
But he did do it again.
I like that.
Because he's been a part of the Vikings in a way over the last couple of years.
No, head coach.
But Gary Kubiak's been kind of like a plus consultant.
I'm just saying he didn't want that title. He didn't want all that work.
That's fair enough. I still think he's doing work, though. I think he's addicted. Like, he can't get away from it, even though it's legitimately bad for his health.
Yeah, well, yeah. legitimately. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, possible landing spots for one of the NFL's top players, if he's even let go, and should Nick Caserio make some calls? That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I haven't been in the mood to do anything, but yeah, we could have gone. Paul and I are talking about social engagements that we miss out on.
I didn't even know it was yesterday, the old Houston Sports Awards.
Yeah, well, COVID messed up the timing of everything.
For some reason, I thought it was next week or something, like right before the NFL draft, but... Yeah, we saw Kelvin Sampson and the University of Houston Cougars were sweeping up, I guess, last night.
Yeah, it's funny because every sports town in America complains, other than a couple like Boston, where you guys have a championship parade every couple of years.
They still complain, though.
Houston is I want to watch how I say this. Houston sports fans complain and want more for their teams, but then a night like the Houston Sports Awards every year happens, put on by the incredible Patty Smith.
She's a great job.
And you see Kelvin Sampson and you see Marcus Jones and the University of Houston football team and how well they did and the basketball team and how well they did. And then you're like, oh, yeah, like the women's soccer team in town is really good. Houston sports has some good teams.
Yeah, it does. The Astros need to get back to being good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, wait, it's too early. My bad. Just kidding.
Yeah, it's okay.
My bad.
We will get to that. But right now,
plenty of time left.
Ladies and gents, we are talking about one of the top players in the NFL. Dual role, and it seems like every year in the draft, you see all the headlines. Like, you can literally Google X, is he the next Deebo Samuel? Will he play multiple positions? Now we know that Deebo Samuel wants out of the 49ers. He has requested a trade. No longer wanting to play that wide receiver running back role, just wants to play wide receiver. He also did the whole wipe the social media references of the 49ers, because that's what you do now in the NFL if you're a young gun. He did have a tweet about it that he later deleted. And it said, quote, reporters' jobs is to make stories, only people know truth about situation as 49ers. It's kind of a hard, and Deebo Samuel, so he...
And he said his agent,
himself
too.
In the third person.
Yeah.
His agent, which is Tory Dandy.
Who also represents A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's significant because it seems like he specializes,
in
wide receivers who were drafted in the 2019 draft class.
Yeah. Hard tweet to follow. He deleted it, but essentially he was saying people make things up. But yet he did request a trade and scrub the 49ers from his social media. What say you on this Deebo Samuel situation? And we'll get in a second to where we think that he could go. But let's start with just the crux of the situation. Deebo Samuel is unhappy with his dual role. That's the reports from NFL Network, from ESPN, and from people that would know. Does that make sense, A? And B, does he even have legitimate chance of being traded? Do you think that the 49ers... pursue a trade for Deebo Samuel?
The 49ers would probably franchise tag him if they aren't able to sign him to an extension. So I don't think that he is definitively gone from San Francisco. I would 100% use the franchise tag on someone like Deebo Samuel, especially because of the fact that he's a guy that has a pretty long, lengthy injury history going all the way back to his time at South Carolina. Hamstring injuries in particular are something that he has dealt with a lot over the course of his career, going all the way back to 2016. As far as the dual role and being upset about it, the first question you asked there, Vanessa, he should not be mad about it. He might be frustrated with the volume of carries and receptions that he gets and the risk of injury that a guy that's playing on a second round pick contract, you don't want to get hurt when you're getting all these extra touches and running as physically as he is. But that is what sets Deebo Samuel apart from every single player in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can take a look at some of the numbers that he has as far as yards after the catch. Every single other player in terms of having great yards after the catch, the top 13 of the NFL, it's all running backs except for Deebo Samuel. And you know why running backs get yards after the catch? Because they're catching screen passes where there's no one near them, or they're catching dump-off passes where there's no one near them. Samuel's making catches, and then he is making people miss. And then after the fact, too, I don't know what the advanced statistics are for him as far as yards after contact per reception. But as far as yards after contact on an average basis, he is number one in the NFL. When he gets the ball handed off to him, he is averaging 3.1 yards after contact per carry. Only one other player is doing that, is the running back for the Seattle Seahawks. So this is a really special player. And this idea,
he fits in that system so well.
Yeah. And this idea that being a wing back is bad for him, maybe from a health perspective, yes. But from a getting him paid perspective, no, that's what gets him paid.
My number one issue with him requesting a trade in this manner is, first of all, the timing is so weird. And second of all, that is what he and his agent used to market him for forever, was that he was this dual player.
Right.
He was unique.
This is him at the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, he was going to start. Oh, sorry. Yeah, he was going to start a trend, and now he's wanting to move away from that brand that he pushed so hard. Here's Debo.
Are you a running back now, or are you a wide receiver? How would you describe you?
We got a new position. It's called wide back. Wide receiver playing running back.
What do you like about doing both?
I can get the ball. That's what I really like, the ball in my hands all the time.
Ball in my hands all the time seems to be counterintuitive with where he's at now, where he doesn't want to be that guy anymore. If you want the ball in your hands all the time, or do you want money? And I think that having the ball in your hands all the time could theoretically prevent you from getting money, seeing as he is somebody who has been injured a lot, specifically the hamstring injury.
I thought that they brought up a good point on NFL Network this morning. Peter Schrager brought this up, which is, if he really wants a different role, Kyle Shanahan is not known for being this rigid coach who takes no prisoners and will not listen. Kyle Shanahan has regular conversations with his guys in the locker room about how they want to be used, what their opinion is. So has Debo Samuel even tried to talk to Kyle Shanahan and sat down and said, look, I'd like to see me moved in this system more, used more here, less as running back, more as wide receiver? Maybe he has, but I thought it was interesting to hear these guys that know Kyle Shanahan talk about the fact that he probably would be interested in listening to Debo Samuel if he wanted to be used differently.
I'd be surprised, though, if he hadn't brought that up. And, you know, as far as his actual usage, if we're combining his catches and rushes per game over 17 games, it's 8 touches a game for 13 yards a touch. That's not a huge volume. 59 carries on the whole season. Sure, that's more than the average wide receiver, but, you know, divide that by 17. What are we talking about? A little under four attempts a game, 4 handoffs a game. I'm struggling to figure out what it is that he is taking issue with that isn't money. Because to me, this seems like that's the only logical reason that he would want out, is he wants to get that contract now before he puts himself at risk again.
So you think it's more of a cash grab? More of just the cliche,
yeah,
I'm going to complain until I get more money?
And I don't blame him either. I love the guy and the way he plays. Someone had said, oh, well, this was Mega Blast. This guy's had one good season and now acts like he deserves the world. He played awesome his rookie year. He got hurt his second year. He played awesome his past season as well. This guy's an incredible player. And if you think otherwise, like, I don't know what to tell you. He is physical. He is strong. He blocks. He runs downfield. He runs over people. He runs through people. He runs around people. He catches the football. He does everything that you want out of a wide receiver. And I would want to get paid too if I were getting the ball as much as I was, and if I have been injured as much as I have been. Now, I can understand why San Francisco won't pay him either, but I'm sorry, I'm not slandering Debo Samuel. I want the Texans to, at the very least, make a phone call here.
That was my next question. Should Nick Caserio pick up the phone, talk about that number 13th pick that they have in the first round, and see if they can make something happen?
You're going to have to give up more than that, though, and that's where I wonder where the Texans draw the line here. Because Tyreek Hill cost a first, a second, 2 fourths, and a sixth. Devontae Adams cost a first and a second. You're going to have to give at least a first and a second. He's younger than both of those two guys, Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams as well. So I'm assuming you're going to have to give up a first, a second, and probably like a third or a fourth or something like that, if not more. And then you have to give them that contract. But the Texans, if you look at them, okay, the next couple of years, how many draft picks do they have? All the draft picks, essentially. Like, just this year, in the first three rounds, they have 5 picks. They have, I think, 15 in the first three round picks the next 3 years. They have, not this season, but next year, they're going to have $92 million in cap space because of all the deals that they haven't signed. 2 years from now, they're going to have $220 million in cap space because no one is on the contract except for the guys that they've drafted this past year.
I think Trey Lance needs a weapon, and I think it would be very bold for the 49ers to trade him. We're going to go through later in the show, by the way, some of Deebo Samuel's possible landing spots, what system makes the most sense, and who even has the draft capital to get him. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the Astros congratulate their ex. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
It's always hard to say goodbye. It was very hard for Astros fans, Houston sports fans in general, to say goodbye to Carlos Correa. Last year at the Houston Sports Awards, Carlos Correa, who is now, of course, at the Minnesota Twins, was named the Houston Sports Awards Player of the Year. This is voted on, of course, by members of the media, other athletes, and it was Los. It was Los.
It was Carlos Correa. I'm surprised by that, and not because he left. I'm because this was decided on before that. I'm surprised that the American League batting champion and Gold Glove member on his team didn't win it. Should have been Yuli.
Yeah, good point.
Yuli should have won it. He won the batting title. He hit 319 and he had a Gold Glove. I mean, that's about as good of a season as you're going to get, especially when you're 36 bleeping years old.
Do you think that maybe the fact that fans knew that Carlos Correa could be leaving, or media members knew he could, had a little bit of an impact on it?
Maybe. I'm trying to figure this one out. I know who I voted for, and I thought long and hard about it, and I was like, the only person that makes sense for a Houston Athlete of the Year is Yuli Gurriel. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the only one that makes any sense.
I think Justin Reed had been nominated.
Yeah.
I think Marcus Jones.
He got suspended.
From U of H had maybe been nominated.
Can't give it to Justin Reed. He got suspended. Just character
hashtag
issues.
Hashtag never forget.
Cancer.
I don't care what anybody says. That was not David Coley.
Team cancer. That's so weird that happened. I can't believe it.
Never forget that Justin Reed then got the Walter Payton Man of the Year nomination.
Should have had it taken away from him because he's clearly a bad guy.
Do you congratulate your ex-girlfriends when they have something really great happen to them?
Well, I'm actually not on bad terms with any of my exes. So, yeah, I would. Yeah.
So, when Carlos Correa was named this Houston Sports Awards Player of the Year, the Astros sent out a very nice tweet. It's a picture of Carlos Correa in sunglasses. He's not in an Astros jersey, but it's a nice picture of Carlos. The graphic says, congratulations, Houston Sports Awards Player of the Year. The text of the tweet says, congratulations to Carlos Correa for being named the Houston Sports Awards Player of the Year, period.
No exclamation point.
It is your birthday from the office.
Well, there's an emoji. I mean, picture, right?
There's a picture. I thought it was very classy gesture by the Astros. I would imagine that had to get approved at the top and, per your point, voted on before Carlos left.
I'm surprised, though, that it should have been Yuli. I guess I'm outraged about an award. I don't know why I am. I mean, this is not a very significant one to get mad about.
I think you also have FOMO that you weren't there.
I definitely do. I wanted to wear my tux. I'm sorry. By the way, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN.
Ah.
Rolando! What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey,
Vanessa. Yesterday, I just found out I'm going to be a first-time dad, and I want to tell y'all I'm sorry for your dad's loss.
Oh, thank you.
Or your loss, I'm sorry. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry about
that. And congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thank you. Here you go, guys. Paul, I wanted to talk to you. I agree with you about panicking on the Astros, but it is only like, what, less than 15 games.
I agree.
And I would start panicking at like close to the trade deadline, or at 75 to 100 grand. That's when I start panicking.
Okay.
And thank you. Have a great day.
All right.
Thanks, Rolando, and congratulations again on becoming a dad.
I'm not going to say anything bad about the Astros to the All-Star break then, and until the trade deadline. Okay. I like it. You know, very easy for me. Positive spirits every single day won't be bringing me down.
You say that with the psychotic fake smile
that
on your face.
That's not psychotic. No,
nothing will. Hey, Sean, nothing will bring me down.
That's classic what happy people and well-balanced people say. Nothing will ever make me not smile.
No, everything's fine. Everything's good and fine and good. But we're almost at a tenth of the way through the season.
Almost a tenth is what we're doing?
Almost
is
a
that,
tenth.
Is that you trying to scare us? We're almost a tenth.
Yes, it is me trying to scare you guys because it's almost a tenth of the season. 16 games.
So we still have 97% or no, 92% of the season left?
Math 90, is hard.
90. 90%. Only 90% left, guys. It's only 90%.
The question becomes, is this a blueprint of what the Astros will be for the rest of the year? Or is this just the combination?
Lives.
That's dramatic. Or is this the combination of a couple of guys having slumps? Jose Altuve, Kyle Tucker. You could put Jake Odorizzi in there, although I guess it's not like a slump. There's Jose getting hurt, Lance McCullers Jr. being out. Or is this indicative of how the rest of the season will go? It seems like Rolando thinks that it's just a couple of slumps coupled with few injuries, and you say that this, you think this is more indicative of how the pattern is going to play out for the Astros for the rest of the year.
I'm not making any predictions off of it. I'm saying is you have a lot of things going on right now. Those things aren't necessarily all going to resolve themselves. It's a lot, and you can make a lot of excuses at this point in time because you can also point at injuries. And you can point out it's early in the year, and that some of these guys are slow starters. I'm just saying the more that you open that box of excuses, the easier it is for you to just get completely sucked into it and ignore the fact that they've scored four runs in or less in all but two of their games thus far.
The offense has struggled for sure. Pitching has saved them on some of the nights that they've won as well. But yeah,
right.
But congratulations to Carlos Correa, Houston Sports Awards Player of the Year.
Should have been Yuli. I'm not giving him a congratulations on that one. No,
okay,
I can't.
Congratulate
it
Carlos.
It was stolen from Yuli.
Stephen Jones, by the way, son of Jerry Jones and part owner of the Dallas Cowboys, made an interesting comment that got a lot of attention because I think it's factually incorrect. He says, you don't win the Super Bowl in the offseason. This was in response to the fact that so many fans are not happy with the fact that they lost Amari Cooper and Lyle Collins. Quote, I don't think you ever win the Super Bowl in the offseason, Jones said via Clarence Hill of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Quote, it's a full body of work, what you put together over time. The biggest thing is, it's been a long time since we have won a championship. You've got to get over the hump. We didn't last year with the same group of players, end quote. Now, what he's saying as far as, yeah, the games obviously happened during the season, but these offseason moves matter. And I do give Cowboys fans, which there are a lot of them and a lot of bandwagons, etc., a slight amount of credit for finally the last couple of years realizing, oh, this is not getting better.
And then you would think that the organization itself would feel the same way instead of hiring some mamby-pamby, boring hire like Mike McCarthy. I just can't believe that they went with Mike McCarthy.
They subscribed to the Mike McCarthy school of, do you remember when it's like he and his guys would like go to a camping site and just...
Is this from Hard Knocks?
Yes, it was so weird.
It's a mojo day. It's a mojo Monday.
Yeah, it's so weird.
It's me, Mike McCarthy. We're going to make Mojo Monday a thing. Like it's Friday Night Lights. Mojo Pride. Go Panthers. Go Permian. I am weirded out by how right Cowboy fans are about things these days. Because if you talk to a real Cowboys fan, they're probably going to tell you, yeah, we suck. This is getting really annoying.
It's been recent.
And last year, I mean, it was set up for them to have a much better positioning than they did. And they'd had a decent enough positioning going into the playoffs, and they still lost the first game. They lost a San Francisco team that's quarterbacked by Jimmy Garoppolo, a San Francisco team that, by the way, tried to give them the game away. And now you lose Amari Cooper. Okay, maybe that's not the end of the world. But losing another one of your offensive linemen on a part of the team that was the strength, and then looking at Ezekiel Elliott's contract and realizing what a mistake that was, even with when you have a running back in Tony Pollard who has shown that he's at the very least good, maybe not as super talented as Ezekiel Elliott can be, they're right. And yeah, Stephen Jones trying to tell everybody everything's fine, everything's good and fine and good. You're wrong. You're right, Vanessa, on
and
that
one. It's been the last couple of years that I've noticed Cowboys, particularly the last two seasons where I've witnessed Cowboys fans, who usually drive me up a tree and who I can't stand.
I don't mind them.
I can't stand them. But you're also from Boston, so your tolerance for annoyance is higher.
Well, they're worse in the Northeast than they are down here. I think the actual Texas Cowboys fans are not the worst.
Okay, so I'm talking about everybody who says they love the Cowboys, not just the legitimate.
That's fair, because there's a lot of people who are the worst who like the Cowboys.
But the legitimate Cowboys fans, I have noticed that they are being more realistic.
Oh, they hate it.
Part of that, I think, might be the fact that, of course, former Cowboys quarterbacks are the two top color commentators in the country for different networks. And Tony Romo and Troy Aikman, like, don't pull punches. Against their own former franchise. I think it's hilarious. I actually think that influences real Cowboys fans not being happy with where they're at.
Yeah, they're depressed. And, I mean, you hate to see it.
Do you? I don't.
You hate to see it. You hate it. You hate it so much. I wonder if they're ever going to be able to pull out of this because, you know, you have your quarterback in Dak Prescott, but there's some limitations as far as how far he can take you, too.
They're certainly in a division where anything could happen, and we'll be talking about that later in the show some of these NFC teams that are, quote-unquote, on the cusp or outright not good have an easier path to the playoffs than some of those teams. Similar skills in the AFC. Okay, coming up on Vanessa and Glon, a little Astros recap. Are you worried about the Astros? Plus, someone visited the Texans. Could it be their number 3 or 13 pick? That's next.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it now.